If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to The Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today I'm going to be sharing some creepy and downright strange small town horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Being someone who has grown up and lived in small towns most of my life, I can tell you these have always been some of my favorites to share on the channel over the years. There's just something about a small town with only a couple hundred residents that always gets my goosebumps going. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, be sure to subscribe, hit that like button, and get ready for these creepy and downright strange small town horror stories. But first, a word from our sponsor. Are you ready to optimize your nutrition this year and hit those fitness goals, swamp folk? Because I am. I've been in the gym for a couple years now, feeling better than I ever have, been hitting those fitness goals, but I couldn't do it without the help of Factor. Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They're dietitian approved and ready to heat and eat within just 2 minutes, so you can feel right and feel great no matter what life throws at you. Now, if your life and schedule is anything like mine and you're super busy, you don't have terribly much time to cook and make great meals for yourself. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active lifestyle or busy lifestyle. You can lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. It's been based on a randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, with 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each and every week. It's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. You can choose from preferences like calorie smart, protein plus, or keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfast, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-on. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and convenience that you can't beat. So, what are you waiting for, swamp folk? Join me and many others today. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/swamped50off and use code swamped50off to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code SWAMPED50OFF at factormeals.com/SWAMPED50OFF to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. So, for a little bit of backstory, you can call me Jay and I am 19. This all happened on July 3rd, 2020. I live in a rural area on the East Coast. My house is surrounded by forest and a bit of swampy patch. Anyway, on to my story. My friend's mom invited me over for a small pre-4th of July fireworks show at their house. It was around 9:30, and I had just finished dinner, so my mom and I were both going over. I threw some flip-flops on and grabbed a drink and my flashlight and headed out the door. I unhooked the bike from the chain and pushed it down into the driveway. I turned it around and biked down the dark tree-covered back road towards his house. As I rode, holding my flashlight in one hand and steering with the other, I began hearing something, like somebody whispering in my ear. I looked over and didn't seem to see anything. I could not understand what this thing was trying to say, But as I got further down the road, I heard more of these whispers coming from my left, and then to my right. The whispers grew louder and louder. My mind starts to hurt from hearing all the whispers around me. Then, something stopped my heart right there. A scream from in the woods way off in the distance, like some woman getting murdered. It made me want to stop, but I couldn't, so I kept pedaling harder. But as I pedaled harder, I heard the screaming getting closer and closer as it started to follow me. Then I heard something else from behind me as well. It sounds like somebody running and laughing, psychotically, like a murderer would. I pedaled even harder and faster. My legs started to cramp, but I didn't care. I wanted to get out of the trees and into an open area. I could not tell if my mind was playing tricks on me, but I felt like I was so much further away from the opening than it was before. So I just kept on pedaling as I saw a car go down the street. I was trying to get closer to it so I could get into the light. I kept going with the full intent of getting away from whatever was happening. As I neared the opening finally, I heard the whisper again in my ear. It felt like something breathing against my ear as it spoke a few words that I finally understood.
"Protect your shadow."
It spoke as I felt this icy cold breath brush my cheeks. I soon arrived there in probably about 9 minutes, which I could have been there a whole lot later if I hadn't been dealing with whatever that was. I pulled in, and we had a good time lighting off fireworks, big bangs, and sprayers, and all the fun things you could possibly do with a fireworks kit. But something happened while I was there. Something had happened between my friend and his little brother, where it ended up with his little brother on the ground crying and the big brother getting backhanded by his dad. As soon as the backhand hit, I heard the snap of a finger by my ear, and I turned around and there was nobody there. The voice whispered again, "The shadow is now ours. Thank you for the treasure." I froze in that split second and thought, "What's happening right now? Like, what the heck?" I turned around to see the little brother get up and sit in a chair and have an ice pack on his cheek. As the night went on, I heard a whipping and a slight breeze. Then I heard what sounded like a cracking off in the woods. I snapped my head to the right to look out into the open farm pasture. As the full moon lit up the ground a bit, I saw a shadow outline of something within the tree line. It started running towards me as I fell back into the chair behind me as I got closer to the fire we were sitting around. It got right in front of me as I sat and staring into this thing's red eyes. That feeling of dread and fear took over me. I did not know what to say. I did not want to ask them if they saw it too, because then they might think I was crazy. But here I was, staring at this thing straight in its eyes.
"We're not here to harm you. We are here to harvest the shadows."
It spoke in a whisper, right in my ear again. I stood up and walked towards the shadow, and as soon as I got to where it stood, it vanished into thin air. I jumped back and looked back around, trying to figure out where it went. I looked over to my right in the doorway, the barn. The shadow made the motion of, "Come here." I looked at them and told them I was going to go to the bathroom. So I walked to the barn and peeked inside of it. I heard the pig squeal a little as I felt a cold breeze blast into me. I looked down the walkway of the barn and heard something creak above me. I looked up and there was a shadow crouched on a beam above me, looking almost like a Spider-Man type creature. It had a weird posture. I nearly fell, trying to back out of there, freaking out. It jumped down in front of me, the impact making no noise at all. I stumble back, falling on my ass. I back up and my back hits the barn door. It slowly walked towards me and crouches in front of me and holds out its hand. In its hand sat a dark version of my friend.
"His shadow, what are you doing with it?"
I had no idea if this thing could hear me. It made a small sighing noise as I saw something like a mouth form on this thing. Its yellow teeth and red eyes were absolutely terrifying me. It stares at me as it holds out the small version of my friend. It smiles and hands me the small figure and I look at it. It gave a small chuckle and vanished again. I slowly begin to stand up as the light slowly starts to flicker on and off in the barn. I start looking around, scared out of my mind. I hear laughter all around me, and then something goes by flying. I run to the door and try to open it. The door would not open, though. As I turned and looked as the light shut off, and then it began to flicker like a strobe light would. As I looked down to the big barn doors in front of the tractor, sitting on the tractor was that shadow person. It stood up and jumped down from the tractor, walking towards me. With every flicker, it got closer and closer to me. It got right up into my face and blew a huge breath of cold, freezing air into my face as I grabbed the doorknob and opened it as I ran through the door, slamming it. I was terrified of what had happened. I had heard a giant bang above me as a firework went off. I slowly walked back to the fire. My heart was beating like a bass drum, and my face was paler than an albino. I sat down in my chair and watched the fireworks go off, hearing them explode. And as they explode, they light up the field a little bit, and I keep thinking I see that shadow out of the corner of my eye. As we winded down for the night, sometime around midnight, we went in and got a ride from my friend's dad in his truck. As we rode back to my place, I got a headache that was pounding in my head constantly. I looked over. Sitting across from me was the shadow. It gave me the motion to shush, and I did. I just rode in the truck until we got back, and I got out and unloaded my bike from the bed of the truck and locked it back up on the porch. I went into the house and told my parents about all the fireworks, and they were happy to hear it. I did not say a word about anything else that I encountered, because I did not want to end up in a psych ward. So I just went upstairs and lay down. As I laid in bed, the shadow sat at the edge of my bed and looked at me.
"Keep hold of your friend's shadow, or else you'll pay the consequences."
And with that, it snapped its fingers and disappeared. And with that, I haven't seen it till this day. I still to this day have no idea what it was. I don't know if it was a demon or a poltergeist, but whatever it was could have killed me or taken my body over or whatever. But it seemed like it was playing games with me. I still have that shadowy statue in my room, put away somewhere. I know if I'll need it, I'll be able to find it again. I still want to know what it was, but I doubt I want to know. This thing terrified me more than whatever I had to deal with months ago. The unknown is truly unknown, and it's something we might never understand.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can call me Brent. Some background information on this story is that it took place around November 20th, 2020, in a small town of Virginia. It all began on the ride from point A to point B. Point B is about a 4-hour drive from my house. On the way there, I was talking to my uncle about cryptids and how the mountain range we were hunting in was known for sightings. Some may be real and some may not be so true. It's not really my place to say if it is or isn't, but that was all going to change the next day. At the time, I was 17 years old and we were deer hunting. We had soon gotten to our campground and set up the trucks and campers. Once we were all set up, we grabbed our rifles and headed to our spot. It was my first time in this part of the woods, so I had no spot in particular. So it was just me, my grandfather, who you can call N, and my uncle, who you can call NC, and my little cousin, who you can call NS. We had driven out to some spots to check out. But at one of these spots, there was a corpse of a doe that was mutilated and shredded to bits. The range was known for bears, but there were no bear in this area. We had thought maybe it was just coyotes or other scavengers, so I brushed it off. I soon decided to break away and walk about 4 miles north to this one spot that my uncle decided to talk about. I carried my Winchester 30-30 rifle and walkie-talkie. As I branched off, everything was like a nature walk in the range. Birds chirping, insects buzzing, and the wind whistling. It was serene and nice. I decided to take a spot in a valley that had a decent view. A couple of hours passed by and there was nothing really in sight. I called over the walkie-talkie and stated that I was heading back. On the way back, there were tracks from a deer in some mud that was not too far away from me. I continued around and followed these tracks. I put a round in the chamber just in case. You know, maybe if I had seen it, I would just get a quick shot at it. I got about halfway back to where I was supposed to be when I saw a head poke out from behind the tree. It was a ragged-looking 6-point buck. I slowly pulled the rifle up, and in the scope was that buck. But something was different. Its body looked as if the deer was, well, something from a cheap zombie movie. At the time, I was just reading about a disease going around which made deer look and act very different. I dropped the sight when it took off into the brush, but it came off as odd because it stopped and had its antlers peered over the small pines. I called back over and told my uncle and told him that I had seen a buck and described its features. He saved me from just hurrying up and getting back due to my distance and the sun setting. I had gotten back to him in the truck. We made our way back to the camp, and that night, everything seemed usual and normal. I had soon gotten to sleep at around 12 Eastern time. The next morning, I woke up in a splitting headache and thought as if somebody was watching me during the night. We had all suited up and stepped out of the camper to see tracks around our site. But it was not only one set, it were multiple sets. But it looked like it was going from human to deer and vice versa. We decided to head back out to the spots we took the previous day, but this time it was just me and my uncle since he wanted to see the spot I had taken. Then, I showed him the slot where the tracks were. He had just told me to be aware and to call him over on the walkie if anything was weird. He headed back to his original spot, and I changed spots. I went about a mile east of my position. I was now sitting on the downslope of a valley with a stream running through it. An hour or so passed by with nothing happening. I then heard a set of steps closing near me, but it was more like a person walking on the leaves and not like an animal on all fours. I called over the walkie-talkie to see if my uncle was the one who somehow was making it to my position. He stated that he wasn't, but to be on high alert since hunters are out here. But as he was speaking, a loud crash came from near me, as if someone had thrown a giant rock into the tree beside me. My instinct was to kick around into the chamber and send a warning shot. Once fired, the steps sprinted off and faded away, but not as far as I would think. They stopped about 75 feet, and then they looked at me. I could just feel this sensation of being stared at. My uncle called over and told me to get back ASAP since he heard the crash and the gunfire. I made my way up to the incline and put a new round into the chamber. As I start to see the crest, I noticed the same 6-point deer standing there staring at me with these dark black eyes, empty, as if they were just bottomless pits. It had shown itself when it stood up with the bones cracking and claws emerging from its skin. At this point, the body was mutilated and still changing. I send another round into it. I get it in the side, and it lets out a deafening screech. I make a break for the path. I could hear it on the pathway gaining on me as I was slowing. I made it to where the woodline breaks to see my uncle taking a form as if he were waiting to shoot the thing behind me. As I get closer, I turn around to see nothing. I explain what had happened, and he in all no doubt believed me. He had stated that this wasn't the first time he had had odd things happen to him while in these woods. He stated that he had an encounter when he was my age with my grandfather. We soon picked up the pace and packed up everything and got into the truck. We got inside and sped out of there. I hope this piques your interest, and I can hopefully figure out what was living in the mountain ranges of Virginia. I will never visit those parts again. You couldn't pay me to. If you believe my encounter, thank you, because it has taken a lot to bring this out into the world. If you do not believe me, then there are other stories on this page that still make you think that I'm not lying. Thank you, Swamp Dweller, again. Your stories help me see that I'm not losing my mind. My name is Brent, and I will soon ask my uncle if he is fine with sharing the other stories of his. Sorry to interrupt these stories, Swamp Folk, but I just need to take a quick minute to say thank you to today's sponsor, Manly Band. Guys, for the better part of our lives, our better halves have been fantasizing about the perfect wedding ring. Cut, clarity, carat, color, you name it. But for us, we're not so picky most of the time. I've had a hard time finding the perfect ring and one that fits my style. Honestly, going to stores is just so stressful most of the time. No worries, though. No more of that. Manly Band is here to rescue from an otherwise hellish band buying experience. Manly Band offers your hand the freedom to look how you want it in just about every type of earthly material imaginable. I chose the narrator for simple and obvious reasons. I really enjoy how it looks and it just fits what I do. To get started, order the Manly Ring Sizer from Manly Bands to ensure that your ring will fit perfectly during work and play. Once you know your size, it's time for the fun part. Manly Bands has an insane selection of materials to choose from. Gold, wood, antler, steel, dinosaur bone, and even the meteorites that killed them. You can also choose from one of Manly Bands' curated collections, like the Jack Daniel's Whiskey Barrel Collection. Once you've selected your band, Manly Band offers free shipping worldwide, a 30-day exchange policy, and a free warranty. While there might be a 50% chance of your marriage working out, there's a 100% chance that you're going to love your band. To order your Manly Band and get 21% off, plus a free silicone ring, go to manlybands.com/swamped. That's manlybands.com/swamped for 21% off. Manly Band, the best damn rings, period. Now, back to the stories. Hi, Swamp Dweller. I've been a fan for a long time, and I've been wanting to share some stories with you. This story takes place in southeastern Kentucky, and is told by my father, who used to be an avid hunter when I was younger. He and his friend would go hunting almost every weekend. They would mostly hunt deer and go to various hunting grounds around the area. They would go very early in the morning, so early that the sun would not even be out yet. This morning was not any different. Only this time my dad and his friend decided to split up for a better chance at grabbing a deer, which is nothing they hadn't done before. Neither one of them was in a deer stand, just regular camo and get up for hunting deer. This was also during a time when cell phones were not very common. This will be important for later. So if one of them shot, the other would follow the sound of the shot and catch up. They never went too far from one another. On this day, they got to the woods and went their separate ways. My dad has a flashlight with him to help him see where he's going. Once he found a good enough spot by a large tree, he fixed himself there, loaded up his rifle, and turned his flashlight off. He began to wait. It was so dark that he could barely see in front of his face. After what seemed like an hour, my dad noticed that it was extremely quiet. He was straining his ears to hear anything. Then out of nowhere, and only a few feet in front of him, came a very low and guttural growl like he had never heard before. The hair stood up all over his body, and all he could do was freeze. He said the growl was deeper than anything that he had ever heard before. He has been hunting in the woods for years, and has come across bears, bobcats, coyotes, and other predators of the like. But nothing has ever come close to this type of growl. He says this thing was very large easily from the sound of it. He says the scariest thing about this growl is that he never heard the creature coming, and he never heard it leave. He sat there frozen, not knowing what to do. He was afraid that if he moved, he might come off as a threat to whatever this thing was. So he sat there, waiting. He waited until the sun rose just enough that he could see all around him. There were never any tricks or any signs that anything had been there. It was October, though there were plenty of leaves and sticks on the ground. But there was only silence. My dad eventually caught up with his friend and they left. Since that day, my dad went hunting a few more times, but then stopped completely. It's been about 20 years since then, but he still gets chills when telling this story. If you know my dad, you know that this is a very straightforward man, a no BS type of person. He does not believe in ghosts or cryptids or anything of the such. So, it's super creepy to listen to him tell this story. Hi, Swamp Dweller. Thanks for sharing my story. This probably isn't the most dramatic story, but it was certainly very strange when it happened. So I used to live in a small town with an upscale downtown area. My sister at the time worked as a journalist at a local paper, and so found out some interesting historical events. One event is that the entire family that was nearby where we lived had drowned in a nearby pond, located in the center of an orange grove, because of some sort of freak accident. The cemetery where the family's gravestone was located was very close to the downtown area. So, my sister and I have always had a casual interest in the supernatural. Nothing major. When my sister suggested we visit the cemetery, I was all in. There were two graves that were of particular interest to us. One being that of the drowned family, and the other being a very old marker near the center of the cemetery that simply read, Mother. So, one night we ready ourselves for a bit of spooky fun and head out for the cemetery. It's a quiet town, so the cemetery is always open. We enter and begin heading towards the center of the cemetery. The path we took led us beneath some lights. I noticed one flickering as we passed under it, and then stopped. I did not think much of it. We arrived at the headstone of the family that had drowned, and we were just kind of quietly looking around when I heard a distinct growl. I stopped and looked for the source. Nothing behind any tree or other headstones were nearby, and nothing that I could see with my flashlight was further away. I did not mention it, and my sister did not seem to indicate that she ever heard it, so we moved on. We finally came to Mother's headstone, and once again quietly just looked around for a bit. Again I heard that growl, and I find no source of where it could be coming from. So I finally asked my sister if she had heard it. She said yes, but didn't want to freak me out. Talking about it later, we both agreed that the quality of the sound of the growl was strange, like it had been inside of your head, but we weren't certain. So, we decided we had overstayed our welcome and went to leave. On the way out, the same light flickered again as we walked under it. I made sure to say out loud that we were sorry for imposing, and we meant no harm and were only curious. But to be safe, I also said firmly that nothing in that cemetery was to follow us home. And that's it. Nothing very climactic, but also a very unnerving time. I've had some strange experiences I might share in the future as well. Hey, Swamp Dweller. Huge fan of your show. I listen to your episodes every night. They really help me fall asleep. Since I'm a fan of your show, I figured that I would share a story with you. So this story didn't happen to me, but to my older sister, who I will call Evie for privacy reasons. So, this happened in December of 2020. My sister was in Japan for a year teaching English for 2019. She came back home in January 2020 and was going back to Japan in March to teach English for 3 years. But when COVID-19 hit, she was unable to do that and had to stay home and try to find work here in the US. One day, Evie decided to take her long-haired German Shepherd Sheba for a walk. Keep in mind, we live in a very rural area, but there are still houses around not too far from us. As she was walking, my sister was about to put her headphones in to listen to your podcast and was passing this new house that someone builds in, I think, December or something like that. We only met the guy once, and he seemed nice enough, but we don't normally talk to strangers. A lot of the times, the neighbors prefer to be left alone anyway. As she was passing the driveway of the house and was about to play your podcast, she heard someone running, like full-on sprinting towards her. She turns around and sees this heavy guy running down the driveway towards her. She began to walk faster and get past the driveway. She was ready to scream at the top of her lungs in case the guy was after her. After a minute of walking, Evie turns around and sees this guy standing at the edge of the driveway, just looking at her with his mouth half open. She later told me that there was no expression on his face. No anger, lust, just nothing at all. It was completely blank. She kept walking, looking forward as she walked. She could see and feel that his eyes were on her. She turned to walk up this hill, and out of the corner of her eye she could see him watching her still. After a few more minutes of walking, Evie stopped and called her dad to pick her up. When they drove past the house, the guy was nowhere to be found. The weirdest thing about this story is that the guy isn't even the owner of the house. Hell, she had never even seen this guy before in her entire life. Which just makes it even more scary thinking that this is just some random guy sitting on somebody's property, doing God knows what. So that's the story. I'm sorry if it's not long or even terribly scary, but I figured I would share it since I really love your show and I do plan to submit more stories. Thanks again, and if you decide to share this story, be safe out there, everyone. And not just from COVID, but from people who have ill intent on others.
So this just happened 2 nights ago, so it's still fresh in my mind. I live in Wisconsin, not too far from Milwaukee, about an hour north, more farmlands area. I can't lie, I am an avid marijuana user, so to be blunt, my fiancé and I were, what we call, burn cruising. So we had the windows partly open, as it's winter, and we do not want a hotbox in case we get pulled over. We're passing a house listening to music. I take a hit and turn and see a house, and as I focus on the small part of the roof that comes out of an odd place like the second floor just below a window, I see what looks like a dish. Behind it, however, I see something else. It turns its head and immediately faces me, as if it sensed me seeing it that briefly. It had big, black eyes like nothing was there. But there clearly was. I was so focused on the eyes for the moment that I was looking at it. I then turned my head, rolled up my window, and didn't say anything. We were on our way back, and took the same route we cruised out. I hadn't said anything to my fiancé, but as we got closer and I realized we'd be taking the same way back, I had to, and I wasn't scared, but couldn't stop tearing up. As we passed the house, I pointed it out, but couldn't look. My fiancé said there was no dish whatsoever, so whatever I saw was much larger than I had originally assumed. Probably more in the realm of 7 feet. I feel like I was not supposed to see it, because it was gone when we passed coming back.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I grew up in a small town in England that had a lot of history. The town had a 900-year-old castle, a 500-year-old bookstore, multiple 250-plus-year-old hotels, and even the ruins of a monastery that dated back over 1,000 years. Needless to say, the town has seen a lot. By contrast, my primary, or elementary to Americans, school building was quite new, pre-World War I at the oldest. To give you an idea of the layout of the main building, it had a small entryway that leads to a hallway that had no windows to the playground on one side and 3 classrooms to the right side. At the end of the hallway was the teacher's lounge and offices. The windows that this old building did have were unusually high up, so if you wanted to look out or in, someone would have to stand on a chair. That part is an important part that's going to happen later. It was a nice school, but sadly was scheduled to be demolished and we were to move to a new building after only my first year there. A mixture of location, student numbers, and structure quality if I remember correctly. There were a few incidents and stories from the school, but this will focus on what happened to me. A simple and almost cliche incident was my first one. I and my friend were alone in our classroom one day because we had to clean a mess we made, as little kids do, and jabbering on about soccer. No doubt, knowing us when we heard the unmistakable sound on the classroom door opening and closing. We instinctively turned to see no one there. Nobody had come in, and the window on the door showed no one on the other side. I suppose someone could have jumped to the side, but we were close enough to the door that we would have heard footsteps outside. These weren't the thickest of doors, after all. It was weird, but that one can easily be explained by an adult, so I didn't think too much of it. The second experience, I was selected to drop off the roll call sheet in the school office one day. A major honor for a kid at that age. So I grabbed the sheet and exit the classroom and slowly made my way to the office, taking my time so I could miss as much of the morning math class as possible. My classroom was at the far end of the hallway, so I could burn a few minutes if I went slow enough. About halfway there, I heard footsteps behind me. My initial thought was the teacher had come to tell me to hurry up, except I didn't hear a door opening. It was winter, and all the doors were closed. I stopped and looked behind me to see nothing. Most adults would have been confused, but I was a scared little kid, so I skipped ahead to freaking the heck out for reasons that will become more clear shortly and began to quicken my pace. Math didn't sound so bad at this point. Almost like out of a movie, the second I turned my head, the footsteps began again. Nope. Time to break the rules and run like crazy to the office. I entered the office in a sprint and dropped the roll call sheet on the desk, and the confused notary looked at me. "You know you weren't supposed to run in the hall," was the initial response. Go figure, right? This third event had me up all night. Another occasion in which I and my friend were in class alone after everyone else was gone. I swear this wasn't a frequent occurrence. We were reasonably well-behaved kids. At one point, my friend left for reasons I don't remember, and I was left alone. Now, just to quickly fill you in, this incident occurred before the hallway footsteps, so I had no issue being alone. I was doing schoolwork in silence when I looked up to read the board and I saw my friend's shadow next to me fetching something from the back of the room. Except, he hadn't come back yet, and the door on the other side of me hadn't opened since he left. This shadow that I now focused on was too big, both in height and girth, to be my scrawny 9-year-old friend. I screamed and got out of there in a heartbeat, passing my teacher, who was immediately concerned, understandably. All I could get out of my mouth was heavy breaths, so the teacher went into the classroom. She came out and told me that there was nothing there. No people, animals, insects, or anything. At this time, my friend finally returned and was understandably confused. I told him later that he just looked at me strangely after I told him, though. I must admit, though, he was surprisingly level-headed for a 9-year-old. I have thought about it many times and can find some explanation, but the windows were just too high for someone to be looking through. And even if they weren't, that area was closed off from the students, so nobody would have been able to been there anyway. That was as bad as it got, thankfully. The next year we moved into a new, more modern building, and with the exception of my teachers, I had no new scary incidents. To basically cap off the whole story, there was one last twist. After the school had been demolished, the construction workers made a fascinating and yet terrifying discovery. Under that building lay at least 12 skeletons that dated back centuries. Theories ranging from the site once being a site where plague victims ended up to a temporary hospital during a battle on the outskirts of town could be found in the papers, but I don't think the origins of the body were ever truly discovered. That said, it certainly had my hair stand on end. Before I begin, I'm not sure how creepy the story really is, but if you take a moment to consider the unpredictability of the human psyche, this may fit into the category just fine. I grew up in a small town in southern New Jersey. I was an 18-year-old male, freshly out of high school and working my first jobs. My first job was a Blockbuster Video. It was pretty cool. The job was a cakewalk for the most part. It really just consisted of standing around renting out and checking in movies. Most of our customers were okay, save for one that I'll never forget. My co-workers and I dubbed her the Britney Spears lady. She was easily in her 40s, wore a pair of skin-tight jeans, tacky tube tops, wore makeup that screamed the clown college switched to Revlon, and always had her bleached blonde hair and pigtails. She was only missing the headset microphone. I'm not kidding. She was that customer that garnered a collective, "Oh snap, not again," when we saw her near dancing through the parking lot towards our store. She always acted like a snob and showed us that it was possible to function on 6 IQ points. In short, her personality sucked. Then came the day most of us will never forget, 9/11. I was at the bank dropping off a deposit for my manager while the chaos unfolded on the televisions behind the teller's desk. I rushed back to the store to find my manager in tears. The rest of the day was quiet. The franchise owner called and told us to shut down after we got everything cleaned up and made a sign stating we were closing earlier due to the events unfolding. We were just about to put the phones on the answering machine setting when you know who called. She spoke with my manager and informed her she was trapped in New York City with movies in her car. I pulled up her account and found, yes, she in fact had 11 films out. We found this to be a bit suspect because they had all been rented the night before. Still, my manager spoke to the owner and he gave her 5 days to get them back and he would waive the $200 fee. She shows up 12 days later. Mind you, my manager was still willing to wipe her slate clean up to 10 days worth of fees. That is, until she comes through the door, yelling, scoffing, and eye-rolling. "I called you high school dropouts and told you I was trapped in the Poconos." Now, you don't have to be a geography major to figure out the Poconos Mountains are nowhere near New York. I watched my manager get so angry, I thought she was going to have an aneurysm. She flipped out on the lying, snotty woman and banned her from the store. On her way out, she screamed at a Spider-Man cutout. We were raffling off and failed miserably at trying to tip it over, almost spilling over as she pushed it. Of course, she tried to get my manager fired. Thank God for security footage showing everything she did, and yeah. The ban not only held firm at our store, but at the 6 other stores the franchise owner ran as well. So, there you have it. The creepiest thing I have ever had a customer do in my 17 years of working is attempting to use a national tragedy as an excuse to get out of late fees. My childhood friend Max lived in a home that was relatively old. Well, old enough to have had something terrible happen to it. Rumor has it that a construction worker died on the job while building the house. Now, I can't say with 100% certainty that this happened, but it seems the most logical. Also, Max lives next to my grandparents' house. This was a 2-hour drive from my house. They live out in the middle of nowhere in a small town. This means I usually only saw him once every 2 or 3 months. Anyway, Max's parents got divorced and his mother couldn't afford the house much longer. I bring this up because I, at the time, never experienced anything paranormal while I was inside his house. It was around November 2012 when I visited Max at his old house for the last time. We did what normal 12-year-old kids do: eat junk food, explore the neighborhood, get in trouble, stuff like that. However, since this was our last time hanging out, I wanted this moment to go out with a bang. I forgot how we ended up talking about ghosts, but it happened. Anyway, 12-year-old me was hyped up on caffeine from some Pepsi, thought it was probably a good idea to provoke the ghost. Bad idea in hindsight. I placed the empty soda can on the floor and said, "If there's a ghost, please move this soda can." This happened 3 or more times. Before I could say it a 4th time, across the house, the laundry door slammed. And I mean it slammed shut. Max and I looked at each other with opened mouths and wide eyes. For a reference point, imagine a long rectangle. Max and I were at the bottom right of the rectangle, and the laundry room was on the top left side of the rectangle. Anyway, Max and I slowly crept to the other side of the house to see what happened. I opened the laundry door and found nothing. Well, the ghost or demon or whatever also physically turned the light switch to the laundry room as well. Needless to say, we ran like a bat out of hell. Now I know what you're thinking. Something completely rational happened and we're overthinking it. Well, you're wrong. Max's mother was at her day job, and it was only Max and me at his house when it happened. Nobody else. Okay, what about the wind? The only thing opened was the front door, which was right next to us. Either way, no wind was blowing that day, and there was no draft to speak of. There's also no way wind could travel from the entrance of the house, turn 90 degrees left, go down the kitchen all the way to the laundry room. That also doesn't explain how the light switch got flipped. After the incident, I went back home and haven't talked to Max since. I do occasionally ride past the house and think of that incident. I've also had several severe paranormal cases happen at my own house after visiting Max's house. This makes me believe I was followed home by an unknown entity. I live in Joplin. When the EF5 came through in 2011, I was at work. It was almost closing time, and I was outside smoking a cigarette because the store was dead. I noticed incredibly low clouds, almost as if I could reach up and touch them, and saw the sky change colors from the overcast gray to a sort of hazy green or yellow. I finished my cigarette, went inside, and looked at the radar. It was gnarly. I heard sirens. I'd heard them a million times before and always ignored them. I did the same here, though I suspected a tornado was imminent based largely on old wives' tales about the green skies. I texted my wife to tell her that a tornado was possible and to be safe. She asked me when and where. I told her that's not the kind of thing I could guess at. That's the last time we spoke for several hours. I got a call from a coworker telling me he was going to chase a tornado. I told him to be safe and called him an idiot, and started to get ready to lock up. We were supposed to close at 6, but it was a sales job with bad weather on graduation day, and only like 3 customers all day. I didn't figure locking up early would be a problem. The rain had already started at this point. Soft at first, but picking up quickly. I tidied up, did some paperwork, and went to lock the door. The front of the store is all glass, and when I looked out, I could see debris on the ground basically crossing the street just to my south. It looked like dirt and rocks, maybe some scrap wood. Stuff was definitely flying. I knew right then what was happening, though not exactly how bad it was about to get. Someone pulled into the parking lot, presumably seeking shelter. I tried to open the door to let them in, but couldn't push it open. I'm about 6 foot, and at the time weighed probably 280 pounds or so, and I couldn't physically move the door. That's when I knew exactly how bad it was about to get. The windows started to shake, almost bowing. I backed away quickly and watched as it hit me that this was now a life or death situation. I had worked in TV news before and knew just how dangerous this stuff can be. I went to lock myself in my boss's office, but he'd locked the door for the weekend. Before I could turn to head to another room, the roof was gone. Holy crap, this is happening. I don't know why, but I thought the safest thing to do would be to squeeze myself as much into the door frame of my boss's office as I could. That's what I did. Something flew through the store and hit me in the back. It hit me so hard I spun all the way around, on the ground, and landed on my stomach. I put my right hand and arm over the back of my head. I pulled my phone out of my pocket with the left hand and tried to frantically call everyone I could. I tried to call 911 as if firefighters could show up and stop what was happening. I tried to call my family to tell them I needed help ASAP. I tried calling my wife to tell her I loved her. I just knew I was going to die, and I need to tell her that I loved her before it happened. Nothing. Cell signal was gone. So I laid there trying to protect my phone in case I survived so I could get help. I waited to die. That's the most messed up thing I've ever experienced. The next seconds are a blur. I heard everything but saw nothing. I kept my face buried. After what felt like hours, it just kind of all stopped. The rain tapered to a sprinkle. What felt like hail, but definitely could have been debris falling, stopped. I just laid there. I honestly wasn't sure if I had died or not. Then I heard the screaming. It came from all different directions. People screaming for help. For some reason, that told me it was okay to get up. I stood up and looked around, and there was a van in the middle of what used to be a pizza place next door. I think it had been thrown from the academy across the street. It hadn't been there before. I was the only person in my store, and everyone in the pizza place seemed okay. The other screams were too far away, so I just ran. A car drove by, and I flagged it down. It was a couple from California. They were only in town for a graduation and had never seen anything like this. I was covered in blood, with open wounds all over my head, neck, and arms. I could hear the wife tell the husband to leave me and that they needed to save themselves, but he said, "He's hurt, we can't just leave him." Thanks, dude. I got in the back seat with their kids. They were very young and very scared. The bloody, bruised stranger sitting next to them only made that worse. I had to coach the couple a little bit about not driving over power lines and how to use a defrost for the windshield. Seriously, the wife was just wiping the condensation with a towel. And it would be just coming right back. They were panicking just like I was. It was chaos. The husband asked me where I needed to go. I said, "I'll go wherever, just get me away from here." So they took me to the Motel 6 they were staying at. When we got there, there were a bunch of people standing around. The motel luckily hadn't been hit, so everyone there was safe for the most part. They were just watching the show. The never-ending parade of emergency vehicles flooding into the city. Hundreds, it seemed, in the couple of hours I sat there. The people at the motel saw me and flew into action. One woman busted out a first aid kit, another guy was grabbing me towels to dry off. My favorite person that afternoon gave me a few cigarettes because mine were ruined after being in my pocket after all of this. After they got me settled and calmed down, the woman who was doctoring me up asked me how bad it was. I remember exactly what I said to her. "It's gone." "What's gone?" she said. "All of it. Everything. For miles. I could see the hospital. It's on fire." I'll never forget the look in her eyes when I said that. The hospital was a few miles from my store. I couldn't see the building itself, but I could see the fire. I knew exactly what it was from. It takes a big building to shoot flames that high. Some of you may remember this storm knocked the gigantic building off of its foundation. After I sucked down a cigarette, I tried calling again. Nothing. My phone was waterlogged too. I just set it down and went back outside. I figured I'd eventually walk home if I had to, but I wasn't doing it until I was certain the storms had passed and I wouldn't be in any rescuer's way. Eventually, that same woman came outside holding my phone. "Whose phone is this?" It was ringing. The one phone call had left in it. I thanked her, took it and answered it. It was my mom. "Are you okay?" she said. "Yeah, I'm okay. Are you guys okay?" "Yeah." "Is my wife okay? Have you talked to her?" "Yeah, everybody's fine." "Is your house still there? Is my house still there?" "Yeah, everything's okay. It didn't really come out here. Where are you?" I was so relieved at that moment that I was the only person in my family to experience this. I thought at the time I would be the only one who was mentally strong enough to be okay after something like this. I found out later I was wrong about that, but I felt good at that moment. My mom called my wife and told her where I was. She and her parents came to get me. A couple of hours later, they got through the traffic and showed up. She took me home and spent an hour or so pulling the glass out of my scalp and picking out pieces of asphalt and gravel that had been embedded in my ears and neck. My boss was out of town and didn't believe a tornado had hit. When he found out it was true, he immediately tried to get to me. His wife eventually found my wife on Facebook and we were able to speak. He was incredible through everything. The next few days were filled with very little sleep and crippling fear. I didn't lose my cool until later. No crying, nothing, it was surreal. The following weeks, months, and years were full of panic attacks and anxiety medication, though. I dealt with survivor's guilt for a long time. I thought for sure the people who pulled up looking for help had died in the storm. I couldn't prove it, but they weren't there when I got up. I found out later by happenstance that they survived. I never saw the couple from California again, and I never got to thank them. I'd love to maybe try to track them down someday to thank them for taking a chance on me. I am mostly okay now, save for about 6 weeks in April and May. I've dealt with it and I'm over it. We take sirens very seriously now.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Around first grade, I became friends with this kid named Stan. He was a couple of years older than I was, but he had a sister that was my age who I was also friends with. I also had a crush on their oldest brother, James. I was that girl who chased the poor, uninterested boys all around the playground. I lost contact with all three kids around middle school. Of course, when Facebook happened, I began getting in touch with people I had gone to school with. It was a moderately sized K through 8th grade school, so you were basically with the same exact group of kids for each grade. This makes some pretty strong bonds, because there's a lot of us who kept in contact after moving on to high school for a little while before drifting apart. Because of this, I was always really excited when I got back in touch with those people. However, not all of these connections have been positive. I got a friend request from Stan one day, under a different name. The messages were the typical, "How's it going? What have you been up to?" etc. Then he started sending messages that were about my looks. They weren't obscene, but they did make me a bit uncomfortable. He started pushing to meet up. I can't explain it, but I just had a really off feeling about him, so I could kind of avoid making any kind of plans. He continued to be pushy about things, and finally I just stopped responding to his messages. He started pushing to meet up. I can't explain it, but I just had this really off feeling about him, so I would kind of avoid making any kind of plans with him. He continued to be pushy about things, and I finally just stopped responding to his messages. I should also message that when I first accepted Stan's friend request, he literally went through every single one of my pictures and liked them. That should have been my first clue, but I just let it go. Then I started getting messages from my friends and even some family members asking me about him. Stan was basically going through and sending everyone friend requests. By this point, I'm like, okay, this is definitely weird. But things got really nuts when my cousin informed me that Stan had not only tried to friend her, but he'd also sent her a message asking all sorts of questions about me, such as things I liked or places I liked to go. My cousin was concerned that he was sending all these kind of messages to people who might actually tell him what he wanted to know. I debated sending Stan a message to tell him to back off, but decided just to block him and changed all my Facebook settings to make it as private as I possibly could. I also sent out a mass message to all my friends and family, informing them of the situation, and to kindly not give out any of my personal information. I was friends with James, but ended up blocking him as well, just to prevent Stan from getting access to anything. Things were quiet for about a week. Then, the friend requests from random accounts started coming in. Some didn't have pictures, some had random images, and they were accompanied by messages that made it clear that they were all from Stan. Full of skeevy comments on my looks and how he was wanting to hook up. And that's putting it mildly, to say the least. Every day I had an account that I needed to block. I contacted Facebook about the situation, though that didn't really help. It finally came to a stop when I threatened Stan with police intervention. My boyfriend at the time threatened to disembowel Stan and feed him his intestines with a side of fava beans and a nice Chianti. The peace lasted for about a year. Then I got a friend request from a girl I'd also gone to school with named Kelsey. We talked pretty frequently both online and over the phone. She wanted us to hang out so we could talk about some things, but then she started bringing things up more frequently. I started to get that weird feeling again that something wasn't right. She kept wanting to hang out, and always at odd times. Then came the bombshell. Kelsey and Stan were dating. We'd all been in the same classes, so the fact that they knew each other wasn't strange. But for them to be dating? I confronted Kelsey about it, and blocked her,
But because we talked on the phone and they have my phone number, of course they both began calling and texting crazy things nonstop. I finally had to get a new number and change it. It's been over 10 years since all this has happened, and I haven't heard from Stan once. Kelsey did try to friend me recently with a different account, and I looked through her Facebook and it shows she's married to another man and there's no evidence of Stan there. So I think I might, but I don't know. I don't think I'm taking any chances.